Well, I appreciate each one of you being here this afternoon, and I know that when you are in a classroom, probably the last thing that you want to do is go to a class where there's a lecture going to be happening in the afternoon, right after lunch. I don't intend to be a lecturer, but I do have something that I'd like to present to you. I'll try to make the points that I feel that is imperative, and I trust that you can go away with something that you can use. So ultimately, I want you to ask a question of yourself. What are you feeding or allowing to feed? So sometimes I find in my life we have to cut off the food supply to protect ourselves, the food supply of something else. Sometimes we have to guard our reserves. Brother Ivan mentioned cattle, and you know, cattle will overgraze the things that they find the tastiest, and they will avoid the other things. But if you will rotate them in a pasture, you can get them to eat the things, you know, like spinach or something like that. You can get them to eat the other stuff. Not cows, I'm sure, would eat spinach, but you draw the parallels there. But anyway, we have to take measures to keep the enemy from devouring some precious things in our lives. I also find that there's times that we feed things unconsciously. I've got a couple illustrations I want to share with you that I find as I go on in life, I learn more and more things. So I'm going to share something I learned this in the past year or so. And sometimes we allow conditions for a whole ecosystem to develop, and then we stand back and wonder why we have a problem. So I'd like to begin with the one that we need to cut off, the food supply. I grew up in a small town, and in the about exactly one block from the house we grew up in, my brother and I, was a little neighborhood grocery store. Probably you could have put at least three or four of them in this building. That's how small it was. But you could go down there and don't expect more than one size of anything, but they had quite an assortment. And as a small boy, we sometimes would go down and get something for our mother. And I remember as a small child, my mother got roaches. And she felt like she got it from that little grocery store down there, and she carried it in. I don't know. I just know that we all lived with the aftermath. And I'm guessing that none of y'all like roaches in your cabinets and in your food supply. And when you open the door and those little bugs go scattering to the corners, it can be a little bit unnerving. And my mother was very adamant about not leaving a crumb of anything on the counter. She was a clean, wiping things off anyway type person, but it was escalated. The care we had to take of not leaving anything that a roach might find appetizing. And we had these little boxes back before, this was in the early days of sticky pads, I think. But little things where the roaches would come in and they'd get their feet trapped and they couldn't get back out. We lived with those things for quite a while. And my mother conquered the roaches by cutting off the food supply. And she done everything she could to limit the life expectancy of roaches in our house. So I'd like for us to turn to a verse that you've probably heard applied in maybe some different circumstances, but it's over here in Song of Solomon, the second chapter, in the 15th verse. Most all of Song of Solomon, we would say, is a love story, and it applies to relationship between a husband and a wife and Christ and the church, and almost seems like an interjection into the conversation. But the 15th verse says, "Take us, the little foxes that spoil the vines, for our vines have tender grapes." And I noticed in one translation, a translator had put the word "for" in between "take" and "us." So it would read, "Take for us the foxes, the little foxes that spoil the vines, for our vines have tender grapes." Some of the commentators say that this may have been something that the bridegroom might have said just before entering into marriage. And all of us here have some responsibilities, and sometimes if there's an important event in our life, we may ask someone else, "Would you take care of something for me?" And so that's the tone that at least one commentator had to say about this. And I would like to say that we have to be aware of the things that could come in and destroy the things that are tender, and of the vines and the grapes. This part of the world is not known for grape production, although you probably could raise some grapes around here, but that's not the forte of agriculture around here. But it was in that area, and I would venture that most everyone that had any kind of horticulture engagement at all had some grapes. So it would be a pretty common expression for us all to be aware that the little foxes would actually damage grapes. I don't know how much foxes like grapes, but I've never been in that kind of setting before, so I'm not criticizing that comparison or that thing. I just know this, that we are doing battle with a very tenacious enemy of our souls, and if we have tender, vulnerable places in our life, the enemy wants to come in and wreak havoc there. He wants to come in and devour. He wants to consume the things that are precious and valuable to us all. I think about the valuable components that young people have today. Young people should have today. I think about the little children when they come into our home and our little grandchildren that come along, and it brings a special thrill to our heart to hold a newborn baby, as the song would say. It's something that we look forward to, and it's something that we relish in holding that. And we think of all the potential that's wrapped up in this small child, and as they begin to grow and develop as parents, we take precautions. We don't want them to wander off and play in the street. We don't want them to be to go down by the creek and fall in and drown, and we don't want them to fall off of the edge of the porch or something. We're trying to protect them physically, but you young people have a very valuable resource in virtue. And I want to tell you that the enemy wants to exploit that. He wants to destroy you. He wants to make you just as something trodden underfoot. He wants you to be used and abused and taken advantage of. And he has so many avenues to achieve his goals. So I want us to realize, for us to maintain the value, we have to take action. Just like my mother took action. She didn't want to live with roaches. And I would venture that none of us just think about the any good that would come from being unvirtuous. Okay? So, you have strength and you have energy. And, you know, the enemy wants to cause you to be wasted in more than one way. You know, they use that term wasted for someone that is inebriated, don't they? The enemy wants you to be wasted. And if you allow yourself to be drawn in to substance abuse and allow your strength and your energy to be consumed with those kind of things, you will be wasted. But it's paramount that you take the initiative to avoid at all costs. Put up the little roach hotels, if you will. Take some thought about where you're going and what you're thinking on and what you're meditating about and who you're developing close friendships with and how late you stay out at night. You know, we're pretty liberal. We let you stay up till midnight. But hopefully we've got a constructive environment. But, you know, I know the enemy comes here today. There's people tuned in with via the internet today. But, you know, unfortunately, the enemy is tuned in too. And he wants to be in your life. He wants to waste you. He wants to destroy your virtue, your strength, your energy. Last weekend, my wife and I, on our way home from the singing in Alabama, we drove through my hometown. Kind of disappointing because it looks like a ghost town. And it was by chance, run into one of the fellows that I went to school with. And this is what happened. These kind of things happened to him. The foxes had been after him. He was weak looking, frail looking. It's because of substance abuse and things has destroyed the strength of his youth. I'm not as young, I'm not as limber, but I know that I've got more reserve than this fella had. He's been used up. And that's what the enemy wants to do with all of us, particularly our young people. Thinking about us that are married. Maybe you just got married. Maybe you're just celebrated your first anniversary, or maybe you've celebrated 30 years or 40 years together. You know, there's something there that's tender. There's something there that's very valuable. And the enemy wants to come in and destroy that. Have you ever noticed that sometimes it seems like an animal that gets in maybe your poultry or your garden or something like that, it seems like that they have just as much intent on just making a mess of things as they do getting their appetite satisfied. They'll shred things, and it's like you could have just at least ate the corn cobs in order instead of skipping and doing every third one or something. Why do they do that? You know, the enemy just wants to bring destruction. He wants to just riddle your marriage and poke it full of holes. But we have something that's valuable. People look on and in amazement when you have a long marriage and an enduring marriage. But we have to take some precautions. We have to be willing to make the adjustments. My mother didn't have those little boxes sitting on the counter and here, there, and yonder to catch the bugs before she got them. But after the bugs came in, out came her little traps. And, you know, she was one that was very conscious about ants and all those other things that might get in your house. So we have to be conscious of where the devil wants to creep in to our marriages and our homes and take the precautions it takes. Take the precautions to preserve the home atmosphere and the objectives and the plans. What are we in this together for? What is it just to enjoy one another? Are we trying to create an atmosphere for children to be nurtured and raised and taught and instructed and equipped? Lord, help us to be able to set the boundaries in place and be determined not to allow the foxes to come in and spoil the vines. And I think about those of us that are getting older. You know, I have to admit, I'm on the backside of middle-aged. If I lived to be twice as old as I am now, it'd be past 100. So, you know, I got to recognize I'm on the downhill side. And as we get older, you know, there's something about age. One of the boys told me recently, Dad, you don't have to try to establish that you know what you're doing. When you walk in the room and when you start interacting with someone else on the job, they just get it. They know that you know what you're doing. Well, there is something about the strength and the wisdom that comes with age. You know, the enemy, isn't there an old saying that says there's no fool like an old fool? The enemy would like us to act like a fool. You ever seen someone that was past middle age trying to act like a teenager? I've seen that happen before, right across the street from my parents. There was a lady that was older than I am now, and she started wearing high heels and got her a SS Camaro or something like that, and she tried to stay out late at night, and I don't know what all she did, but it was like, well, that really looks ridiculous, you know, for her to be 70 plus and doing like acting like that. But you know, the enemy wants to destroy the strength, the courage, the stability of the older ones. That's valuable stuff, just like these grapes. And these vines were valuable to this one that made the statement. Take for us the foxes. Make an objective to protect the vines and the grapes. Don't allow the enemy to come in and make a destructive path. Don't allow yourself to lose your goal and what you're headed for. So work with that, would you? So I'd like to move on to another point. So I have a shed at my house, and one of the things I park in that shed is my tractor, and another one is my lawnmower. And I'm not one that likes to I like my dog to be able to eat when he wants to eat. So I'm not one that wants to put out a little portion in the morning and a little portion at night. And I talked to somebody recently that was telling me that they knew a person that had taught their dog to eat from a spoon, and the dog wouldn't eat unless you was feeding it with a spoon. Now, that is the last thing I want. So I got one of these automatic feeders, you know, pour my dog food in, and the dog can go up there and bump it with its nose, and he can eat if he wants one mouthful or 10. I don't care. You know, I'll just go check it and fill it up every once in a while. So that's the way I fed my dog, and I was doing that on purpose. But I got to noticing that my lawnmower and my tractor was becoming target practice for birds. And I didn't like that. And then last winter I had a pig, and so to keep the food out of the weather, I stacked my sacks of pig feed. I'm not a full-time pig operator, but anyway, I had one pig we was fattening out, and so I had my food under there, and I would get my feed and go put it in for the pig, and boy, I started having an epidemic of mice. You know, mice will eat pig food, They'll chew a hole right in that sack and they'll just go to town on my pig food. It got so bad that I decided I'm going to get rid of the mice. And I went and bought one of these metal traps, you know, where they can go in the little door and all have a little living space in there. And one time I caught 6 in one night. Now that's a lot of mice, because there's a lot more of them that didn't go in that hole. Well, between bait to kill the mice and a trap to catch them, I was like, I mean, being inundated with things that I don't want. You ever feel that way in life? You look around and you ask yourself, why am I having all these problems? Why is the birds using my stuff for target practice? It's terrible. I mean, it looked like they were roosting on it, and I didn't even invite them in there. They just come in, and it was making it everything really look pretty bad. So back during this past winter, I got rid of my pig and kind of got the mice population under control because I got rid of the pig food. I learned stuff as time goes on. It just somehow didn't click with me that I was feeding birds. Until in the real cold weather we had this last winter, I noticed that in my apple tree there must have been, 100 or more birds, big old black starlings, sitting in my apple tree. And then I got to noticing they're flying in and out of my shed. And then I noticed I filled up the dog feeder and checked, 10 pounds, 20 pounds of dog feed and checked it the next day and it's empty. I don't have that big a dog. He didn't eat all that food. Those birds was eating that dog food. Just FYI, birds will eat dog food just like mice will eat pig food. The enemy will come in and you can be feeding something that you didn't intend to feed. And that's the thing I want us to get a hold of. You don't like the results and maybe the marks that you're seeing in your life. I want us to stop and think this afternoon. What are you feeding? You might think you're feeding your dog. I did. I was storing my food for the pig, but I was feeding some other stuff that I was not aware of when I put the feed out there. If, over there in Proverbs 22:6, it says, train up a child in the way he should go, and when he's old, he'll not depart from it. I've used that many times, and I have to think, what if I'm not liking the results? Maybe I ought to check what I'm feeding them. Maybe I ought to stop and stand back and look at what my environment is conditioning them to behave like. What are we feeding them? Are we feeding them the privilege and the ability to be disrespectful to their mother, to the father, to their siblings, to the pastor, to the congregation? We can give them something, anything, to satisfy their desires. Many times, we're living an affluent age for the most part. Many of us have given our children things that we didn't have And my parents probably give me things they didn't have. And sometimes we can give them a perspective. And we can give them a perspective that you don't have to listen to something. You don't have to pay attention. And you don't have to cooperate. And then we start seeing some splatters that you don't like. They didn't talk to you the way you thought they ought to. Or maybe you was kind of wishing they weren't the ones that was talking to the neighbor or someone else. Maybe they begin to question some valid doctrine that you have held. But you've questioned some other things and said that maybe that was a man's idea or something. And you have came to the point that you fed them something, and here you've got something on your hands that you didn't want. So I want to ask us, what are you feeding today? Are you setting up a buffet for birds and mice when you thought you was feeding your children? Are you doing things and saying things to one another that causes them to look on marriage as a drudgery? And then you wonder why you don't have the reward of being grandparents. What did you feed them? Are you feeding them something that will help them feel comfortable in being selfish? Or being lazy, or being rebellious? Or feeding them something of that would allow them to be non-committal? You know, it takes a lot of commitment to provide meals for a group like this and then clean up the trash afterwards. You end up staying up late. I know what that's like, and many of you do. Lord, help us. What are we feeding them? The reality is that when we get undesirable results, and you're experiencing that, there's probably something you fed. There's a good chance of that. Psalms 37 and 4, what does that say to us? There's a comment made this morning about those that feel victimized and they feel like that's honorable. You know, if you sympathize with that, you might get something you don't want. If you sympathize with, you've really not been given a fair shake. So I want to tell you a little something that's personal. My brother and sister-in-law and I and my wife just had a little conversation last night about my dad. How many of you here knew my dad? There's a few of you. Did you know him as a boy, as a young man? you would probably think that he had a dad kind of like me or my brother, wouldn't you? But he didn't. My dad was born in 1930, so I want you to put that in perspective. And his father left the home before he was born. He left my grandmother expecting a child in 1930. You know, my dad tried to make contact with his dad. Didn't work out very well. Would you think he's a victim? He was. He was a victim. He could be a hero to excuse any kind of behavior that he wanted to in our day and age that we live in. But he didn't do that. This Psalms 37 and 4 says, delight thyself also in the Lord, and he shall give thee the desires of thine heart. That wasn't a verse that was my dad's particular motto or anything, but I can tell you that he found his identity in knowing the Lord. And the Lord helped him to fill in the gaps. I'm who I am today because of who my father was when I was a boy. He could have fed me something different, and rightly so. And you may have experienced some things and you want to give your children a better experience. I don't know how he did it. It was only God that helped him. And I know that we all are going to have God help us. Or we're going to feed something that's going to cause the next generation to grow up and go astray. They're going to feel justified in negating and throwing valid doctrine out the window. They're going to feel comfortable professing salvation and living below the bar. And it's because we've made them a privileged person. So what are we feeding? Are we feeding them the right things? I just want us to ask ourselves the question. If we're looking on and we're seeing results that we didn't like, that we don't like, I'd like for us to find out what we're feeding. You might be feeding some mice and some birds. I don't know about you, but I'm not particularly fond of spiders. Not because I've suffered from a spider bite. I don't know if I've ever been bit by one. But I've sure combed through a lot of them crawling under an old house or something like that. So I'm not real scared of them. Maybe you ought to be more afraid of them. But there's this fascinating thing about spider webs. They're built where the bugs are. And the bugs are where the light's at. So a few years ago, we had this dilemma at the back of our house where when we come home, we always had to go in the door through spider webs because we had a light by the back door. And when we would leave to go to service or be gone from the house after dark, we turned the light on, left the light on so we can see how to put the key in the door. So my wife suggested we need to move the light. We have a deck at the back of our house, so I built a little pole and I took the light off the side of the house and I put it over there, about 10 or 12 feet. So now we can come in and go in and out the back door. We can see what we want to see. And the spider webs aren't there anymore. Amazing convenience. But there was a whole ecosystem set up at the back door of my house. And I didn't intend for none of it to happen. All I was wanting was a little light on the subject when I come in. And I noticed it on my job, right there in my work area, I got a whole nest of spider webs coming around up on the wall up there. And it's just dawned on me recently. I've learned some things pretty slow sometimes. But I noticed that up there on the wall, I've got a clock and I got it plugged in and it's got a light in it. So it's just come to my realization when everything's dark in there and my little clock's glowing over there on the wall, all the bugs come to that light and guess who comes next? The spiders do. And then they make webs and then it looks like I don't care. I really do. I just don't have time to clean it off sometimes. But anyway, you get the idea. I wouldn't buy spider food and put it out, and I sure wouldn't whistle for bugs to come my way. I just don't like the end result of all of that. But the fact is, I'll leave the light on. I'll leave the light on. If you tell me you're coming to my place, I'll leave the light on. I won't, because I don't have street lights where I'm at, I'll leave the light on so you can see how to get up the steps. I think sometimes we look on and we wonder why souls choose to go a different path. And sometimes we are trying to help them, and in our efforts to be a light to them, we end up getting things exposing our thoughts and our minds to their ideas and their belief systems and their thoughts. And sometimes, you know, those thoughts can start causing us to ask questions of ourselves, of the things we've been taught. And it can get down into where it starts affecting our heart and who we are and our belief system. And we started out trying to be a light to someone else. So I'd like to turn back over here to Proverbs 23. And it's talking about interaction with how we ought to behave ourselves when we would sit down with a ruler or something. In verse 1 and 2, tells us how we ought to behave there. In verse 6, he says, "Eat thou not the bread of him that hath an evil eye, neither desire thou his dainty meats. For as he thinketh in his heart, so is he. Eat and drink, saith he, but his heart is not with thee." You know, there are those out there that we want to help. And there is something wrong in their heart. They got something mixed up. And he wants, they want us to take of what they had. I don't know if you've ever run into someone that wants to help you see something better. And had an experience not so long ago that I had to come to the place that I told the man, I said, I'm trying real hard to get where I can find something to agree with. But I don't believe what you believe. I just had to tell him that. You know, we're going to have to be careful, or there will be, in our efforts to be a light, there'll be some spider webs of confusion. And we'll wonder why we feel confused when we weren't confused before. We'll wonder why we can't see clearly. There's nothing like walking through a bunch of spider webs that inhibits our vision. It's just like, I don't know how to get them off, because you can't see them all sometimes, or hardly ever. You know, we can lose our convictions by feeding thoughts and allowing them to take roots in our heart. Just like the man that says, here, eat. But his heart's not with us. He's got something else. You know, the enemy's got something else in mind. He'd like for you to lose it on a good venture trying to help someone else. You know, our thoughts ultimately define who we are. And our thoughts will attract our lifestyle. You think about that. Our thoughts will attract our lifestyle. If you think thoughts that are devious, you'll find yourself in a devious position at some point. What are we feeding? What are we allowing to feed on us and in our lives? In 2 Corinthians, the 10th chapter, in the 5th verse, he says here, casting down imagination and every high thing that exalteth itself against the knowledge of God, and bringing into captivity every thought to the obedience of Christ. There's a whole group of people that are able to probably outmaneuver myself, at least, and maybe many of us, in presenting logical things. New way of presenting the same old corruption that the enemy has. You ever been presented with a pyramid marketing thing? And then a few years go by and here comes something else. And recently this fella come to me and he said, Dan, this is the best thing that ever happened to me. There is something here. Would you give me 45 minutes? It's somebody that I've got acquainted with. And, okay, we'll do that. You're being respectful to me. I'll be respectful to you. We got to the end and I told him, I said, you know, it's just pyramid marketing. He told me up front, it's not. And I said, if you don't know it, I don't like that. But anyway, he assured me, I've checked in, it's different. I said, no, it's not different. It's the same old thing. The enemy has people that can outmaneuver me. I know that. Sometimes I come away from situations and say, I shouldn't even have listened. You know, but the devil wants you to not only listen, but he wants you to begin to really think about it. And he wants to affect your heart. And before long, you'll have so many cobwebs in your life that you don't know what's right. You don't know what it means to be modest. You don't know what it means to be upright. You don't know what it means to be holy before the Lord. You'll be confused. You know, in Mark, the second chapter, it talks about the scribes being there in that situation. And I believe it says, but there were certain other scribes sitting there. Let's go turn there and read a couple verses. We won't be much longer. Mark, the second chapter. In maybe verse 5, which says, when Jesus saw their faith, he said to the sick of the palsy, son, thy sins be forgiven thee. But there were certain other scribes sitting there and reasoning in their hearts. What were they doing? They were sharing their thoughts. Well, what were their thoughts? I don't know, but I'm going to tell you, it's probably be pretty scary for us to start entertaining the same thoughts they were entertaining. It'd probably disturb your trust and your confidence in God if you knew what their thoughts were. You know, there are some good people that don't have the same perspective of what it means for us to say, without holiness, no man will see the Lord. There's some good people out there. And if you begin to start absorbing thoughts, and it gets down in your heart, you're going to have a whole spider nest going on, and you're going to be confused. I just want to challenge us this evening. If you feel like, I just don't know. I see good people here. I see good people there. I'm thankful for the good people I know. But I believe that we have, as a body of people, I believe we've been handed something that's very valuable. It's kind of like the grapes and the vines that the fox wants to destroy. So what are we going to do? Are we going to let a whole system build up that brings confusion? You know, it'll change the future. It'll change who you are. It'll change who we are. What are you feeding? Are you feeding that's not necessary spirit? Are you feeding something that measures yourself amongst others? Are you willing to make those concessions and leaving the light on? I want us to be a light in the world. I want us to be able to give something to the enemy, or to the world, the enemy too, but I want us to give something to the world around us that they know where to turn to. They know that there's a sense of direction there. You'd be surprised as the people today that literally don't know north from south. It's because they begin to depend on something we call a GPS. And you can be going south and the road is turned around with the arrow pointing up on the screen. Now if that's not confusion, I don't know what is. When my wife and I got married, and this is before GPSs, by the way, she would take the map and she would turn it where the road was pointed in the way we was going. I said, don't do that. I get mixed up. Hold that thing, we're north at the top of the page. Then I know if I'm going south and I can... Anyway, we're still together, so it didn't cause too much trouble. But we can start just following the GPS with a little arrow, as the little car on the map is going that way. And we're not setting back and considering how this weighs out with the Word. What does it mean to be holiness unto the Lord? What does it mean to be modest? Does it mean just a discounted worldly view? Y'all ever go to Ross and buy any clothes? Dress, what is it, best for less? Yeah, dress for less. What is it? They got clothes in there that didn't sell somewhere else, and you can buy them for less money here. Is that what modesty is? A discount, I mean, not the full-blown worldly attire, but just, you know, a Ross edition of it. I don't mean to pick on them, if anybody's here affiliated with them. It's just a thought. What is it? No, it's, we have to be cognizant. What am I putting on display? Am I putting my flesh on display? Am I catering to something where people looks on me with, I don't know, with some kind of feelings that they shouldn't look on me with? I just want to challenge us to ask ourselves the question, what am I feeding? And what am I allowing to feed on the valuable things that God has blessed us with? You pray for me.